Thank you, Julia. Thank you for inviting me to come here and speak to you today. My name is Joey Norikana. I'm the senior engineer at Fraunhofer USA at the Center for Molecular Biotechnology. And what I'll be talking about is, like we've talked about all day, LEDs in a plant-based biopharmaceutical production. So for our company, just to give you a little background, is so Fraunhofer is Fraunhofer USA has 8 different locations in the United States, but our parent company is German, of course, and there are 60 centers in Europe, and the model is to be associated with the university. We are nonprofit. We develop IP, and we look for commercial partners to license that IP. The one that you would be, the one piece of IP that you would be familiar with is MP3. So MP3 technology is a Fraunhofer IP. So, all right. So this presentation, I'll be covering an overview of plant-based pharmaceuticals, and by that I mean not a medicinal plant, but we're talking about vaccines. We're talking about therapeutics. So this is quite different than some of the other things you might think about in terms of biopharmaceuticals. Also, we use one of the standards, is a plant-based transient expression system, and I'll describe what that is. We'll go through the process, and we'll give a little talk as to how that adds value to our plants. Then we'll touch on the potential for LED lighting in this type of production, and I'll summarize some of the points that we make. So a little background for plant-based biopharmaceuticals. So in the late 80s, early 90s, having pharmaceuticals being produced in transgenic plants and plant viral vectors started to come around. And about 1995, you start seeing plant cell cultures being developed where they're expressing the pharmaceutical material. And around 2000, they started getting transient expression systems. So these types of platforms are still available now, and people still use them. But I guess my focus is not so much, it's more on a scaled-up production. It's not so much at a bench level and what a lot of other researchers are doing. But basically, when you get to the next level where you're doing pilot scale and or larger types of production, what are the options that you have? So if you're thinking about a company trying to produce large quantities of some type of vaccine or therapeutic, what are your options? If you're going with any of these, you could be looking at field production. Might be a little bit tough, but you could still go after do it in a contained production facility where they have large, like mammalian cell cultures. So it's something similar. You could have the large stainless steel tanks. This one is a disposable bag, or you could be looking at controlled environments to do your production. So this list is by no means extensive or exhaustive. There are probably other companies, but these are the ones that I know of that are fairly large scale and could handle large throughput. So the first one is Icon Genetics, and they're in Germany. They use a transient expression system, and they also use transgenic plants. There's also Kentucky Bioprocessing, and they use transient expression as well and transgenic plants. And Protalix Biotherapeutics, they're in Israel, and they use genetically engineered plant cell cultures. So I don't want to misrepresent these companies. If you want more information, please go to the websites and find out more. Another company that is in this area is Medicago. They're in Durham, North Carolina. And they also use transient expression in genetically modified organisms. What's interesting, or what's really exciting about Medicago, is that last year Mitsubishi Tanabe purchased Medicago for $357 million. So as a pharmaceutical company, plant-based platform, they have a pipeline for a product that this company was interested in. And that's what happens. So there is... The maturing of this industry has not really completed, of course, but you're at a level where you're seriously being considered by Big Pharma. So another large-scale production area or company is Caliber Biotherapeutics. This company is in Texas, and they use transient expression. They also use LED lighting. This is one of the companies that I know of that have this facility, and it's rather extensive. So at Fraunhofer, we're based in Newark, Delaware. We have Transit Expression as well. I'm showing two pictures here. The one on the left is how we produce R&D biomass for smaller scale production. So we work at the bench. We have a few plants where we're doing testing. When we get a vector, and I'll explain later, that looks promising, we would scale up to the next level. The next level would be production coming out of the room on the left. As we get a process and we're getting closer to having a pharmaceutical going into clinical trial, we would go downstairs into our pilot plant. That's a lot of stainless steel, but that's also under GMP or good manufacturing practices. This is FDA regulations, so you're under their regulatory guidelines. So we have to be SOP driven, a number of other things. But so that's what we have in-house. So when I talk about transient expression, really what are we talking about here? So what we would do is typically you grow plants in a controlled environment. So once you have your plants, you would develop, well, in probably in parallel, but you would develop a launch vector for your transient expression, and I'll explain the launch vector a little bit later. Then you go through, well, how are you going to introduce your vector into that plant in a uniform, efficient way? Because you're talking about production and you can't do everything by hand. You've got certain sizing of your trays. You've got a larger material problem and a logistical problem to get through. So how do you do that? Well, we use vacuum infiltration, and I'll explain a little bit later. And the next step is really biomass harvesting and protein purification. So you have to take the biomass, you have to figure out how you're going to get that protein that's in your plant tissue out and basically into a little vial for injection. So what is their launch vector? Okay, we start with a agrobacterium, and we would clip out between the left border and the right border. In that section where it says viral vector location, that's where we'll insert our viral vector. All right? So the viral vector, it has components of replication and movement, and that target would be our target protein. So our target protein could be a influenza vaccine. It could be some therapeutic, some antibodies that somebody wants to produce. But we would tag that on the end and the replication and movement so that once the this material gets into the plant cell, starts to basically take over the protein processing area of the cell and starts kicking it out. So once we get all that together, that is our launch vector. And that's what we would try to, that's what we would introduce to the plant to make our protein. So how do we do it? When I'm talking about vacuum infiltration, basically what we do is, let's see. So here's our plants. We grow on a Rockwool substrate. We have our inoculum here. We would invert the plants into our inoculum, and then you would pull the vacuum. I think everyone in here would know that there is air inside your plant tissue and leaf tissue. Pulling the vacuum, the air expands. It will exit the tissue, and once that exits and you break vacuum, that remaining volume would shrink back, and as it shrinks back, it'll pull in our inoculum. So that's how we're inoculating at a, you know, consistently on a large scale. And you're thinking, well, what does it look like after it comes out? Because it's a lot of stress. The plants look heavy and tired, really, and you can't see through it, which is really pretty interesting. But within a few hours after you do this, probably 2 to 3 hours, the plants recover and they look relatively normal. So it's an interesting process to see how the plants really absorb that extra liquid and able to come back. Beyond me, I'm an engineer, so I beyond my understanding. But so you have an infiltrated plant. Now, what does it look like? I mean, what happens now? We're talking about transient expression of protein. We've already introduced our vector. Our launch vector's in there. So now what are you doing? So just to give you a little time course of what happens is that is the plant right after infiltration. So it looks tired, it's translucent, all of that. So it takes a while, so you don't really see too much in the next couple of days, but at day three after infiltration, that's what the plant looks like under regular light. When you start putting it under UV, you start seeing a little bit of the green fluorescence in this area, right? So it's starting to accumulate in some of the tissue. So day four, your plant looks like this under normal light, and then under UV, it starts to look like this. And then day five, it starts expressing more. Day six, more. And, you know, the plant doesn't look happy about this, but it's doing what we want it to do. And day seven, this is what it looks like. So as a transient expression system, we're looking for the peak day for harvest. So we would go through the studies that are required to figure out, well, it's day seven, and then we start doing our harvest, go through our harvest procedures. So unfortunately, GFP, the demand for GFP isn't that great, so you got to figure out what you're going to do with this. I mean, I guess you could make those things for Halloween, but it's a really short cycle, and you're probably not going to make enough money for the year. So here's a hypothetical example of what kind of we would go through for a product. So let's say that there is a desire for a vaccine. So a client comes to us and says, well, I'd like to have a vaccine at $1 a dose. How can you do that? What do we have to do? So it's like, okay, well, first we would have to develop the launch vector and see it, how well or poorly it performs, and then there is some optimization that goes along with that. But let's say we get that done and we look at the expression, and now we have this vaccine expressing out of our biomass at 200 mg per kilogram. So just because it expresses there doesn't mean that's as much that I could capture. You have to separate a whole lot of other things that come out of the plant when you start breaking all the cells. So when you do that, in the end, you'll come out with, maybe you come out with 100 milligrams per kilogram of biomass. So if you could do that in parallel, you make that material, but you have to figure out how much is an effective dose. That requires animal testing. That requires dose ranging. There's a number of things that go into it. You have to find a applicable model, mouse or whatever, rabbit, whatever. But you have to find something that is going to be looking at your protein in a model that will scale up to tell people that this is what you need for human beings. So let's say that we have an effective dose of 10 micrograms. So for a million doses, it would require 10 grams of purified protein. And then for me to make 10 grams of purified protein, that requires me to make 100 kilograms of biomass. And that would be $1 million worth of vaccine, if that's the scenario. So when you're thinking about, well, making 100 kilograms of biomass for $1 million sounds great. Yeah, anyone would do it, of course. Remember, there are plenty of embedded costs with this. So someone has to develop the vector. You have to go through your expression screening, figure out which day it's going to peak at. There's a lot of optimization that goes along with that. In addition, your purification process. What you could do at the bench and get purified protein is quite different than what you could do at scale. And when you start thinking about that, it changes a lot of the equation. Also, dose ranging and efficacy. That's another aspect of it. At a smaller scale, you would make your purified protein at something comparable to what you think you're going to be putting out into the clinical trial, and then you would go through your animal models. So, and then in the end, after all that, you have to go from your R&D setting and get all your technology transferred down to a sufficient level where it's not going to change. The problem is you start going down to the next level and you're locking yourself in now, because now you're starting to write documents for the FDA and say, well, I want to do a clinical trial on a new drug, and this is how we make it. And if I later on down the road say, oh, we changed three things here, they'll say, no, you show me that that is correct, or that is a like for like, or how is it improve, or what changes. And you just opened up a large can of worms for yourself, because you're going to have to make some type of bridging study. You're going to have to prove to the FDA that what I'm doing is not going to change the parts of the vaccine, and maintain safety is the big thing at a phase one clinical trial. So you've got to be careful about what you're doing. And when that transfer happens to go into your manufacturing facility, it's pretty much locked down. You don't want to make too many more changes. So in the talks that we've been hearing this morning, they've been very interesting. For us, though, it's a little bit different because our objective isn't the nutrition factor. It's not being able to flower on time. It's not to make it more interesting in terms of ornamental. The bottom line for us is maximize our protein yield per kilogram of biomass. That's it. You know, whatever you do, that's what we want. And it's a little bit different than some of the other things that you hear about. So this is an LED session. So where does LEDs come into this? So we, you know, for us, we would like to, we use a wild type of Nicotiana benthamiana. And for us to modify or optimize our morphology, we would be looking at maximizing our leaf to stem ratio. What you don't see in this picture is that everything's lit up except the stems, right? So if we could maximize our leaf to stem ratio, that would be helpful to us. I mean, if we have a leaf to stem ratio of 60 to 40%, then you're telling me that every time I harvest this, 40% of what I got doesn't do anything for me, just clogs my filter. So why would I want that? Why don't we get something else that would help us in that area? So if we could use lighting to increase our leaf to stem ratio, then that's great for us. The other thing that we would want to do is enhance resource partitioning. And what do I mean by that? Is that so let's say that we have a plant that produces more protein when it's flowering. So you think, well, okay, there are growth regulators that you could apply to make this flower. I mean, I could do that with light, but then it's kind of uneven. You have to wait, and it's a little bit uncontrolled. Why don't we apply a growth regulator to this? And they'll all flower uniformly. I would do my vacuum infiltration. I go into post-infiltration, let it sit there a week, whatever, and start my harvest. And the problem with that is that what are you applying? Whatever that is for a pharmaceutical, you're going to have to turn around at the end and have an assay sensitive enough to say, you know, by gosh, we used it over there and it's gone over here. And it's not just that it's gone. It's like, well, has someone done a study to tell me what the safety factor for a human being is? What's the tolerance level for this at this end? So do I know how much went in? Somebody else has to do a study to say, well, for a human being, whatever that growth regulator was, it's safe at this level. Well, is that level being achieved here? Well, you start doing this, and you could tell that there's a lot of regulatory issues you're going to have to deal with. So wouldn't it be easier for us to sit there? I think that Dr. Folta had suggested this as a light as a regulator. So you could start changing your light patterns and start getting better product coming out. One of the other issues that we look at is that we use Nicotiana benthamiana. It's the model plant for plant virologists, and it does a great job. It expresses lots of different proteins very well. But that's not to say that we have exhaustively tested every plant there is to see if there's something better. I mean, we do some of that testing, but we are a nonprofit. We can't do this forever. So if there are other plants that could do a better job than benthamiana with a better lighting strategy, then we want that. In addition, there are genetically modified plants that are online. So if somebody came to us, we are a contract manufacturing facility. If someone comes to us and says, well, I have this GMO that I want you to make grow at scale and infiltrate and purify so we could go into a clinical trial. Well, if we get that, and then they say, well, we grow it with these kinds of lights. We have this kind of ratio. And it's like, well, we have fluorescent lights. That's all we got. Are we going to turn them away? It's not likely. You have to have some flexibility to be able to figure out how are you going to address their issues. The other thing is lettuce. Lettuce is a good crop. I mean, people use these plants to make vaccines. We're not the only ones. I'm talking about the companies I mentioned are large scale, but there are lots of labs around the country that make pharmaceuticals in plants. One of them is lettuce. And lettuce would be great in our system if it worked well. I mean, no stem, lots of leaf area, pretty good. But, when we need to have the flexibility at our company to be able to handle that. So we're kind of looking at different strategies and different lighting that's available for us. So in our work, what we try to look at, or what we're looking at, we have a dimmable four-component LED fixture. Those are the output levels, and I'm showing a red to far red. It seems to be popular with all the researchers. Red to far red ratio for our plants. We're trying to maximize the, see if we could get a shade plant response and increase our leaf area. So, okay, it's kind of small, but what you're seeing is the control. These are fluorescent plants grown under fluorescent lights. The plants on the left, they're a week older than the plants on the right. Just want to give you a look at that. These plants are, I believe, 4 weeks old. So if we use the red far red ratio of 1.2, we get taller plants, spindly, but quite a bit taller. And then if we use the red far red ratio of 0.7, we get less robust, and we basically repeated what people know for seeds and germination and giving too much red light or far red light. It doesn't happen very well. So we learned our lesson and repeated something that's already out there. In addition, we are looking at commercially available fixtures. The flexibility we have with our dimmable fixtures is that we can recreate some of the different ratios, red to blue, that are commercially available, and we're trying to evaluate that for our systems as well. So we seem to get good growth. There doesn't seem to be any issues with it, except that you can't tell if it's really healthy or not until you start putting in green light. So that's something everyone knows now. So this, what I'm getting to is that for LED lighting for us, what we see is that it's not that hard to get our fixture to be programmed. It's four components. Not to say you couldn't put more components in there, but we have the ability to change it. I don't think it's that hard for the engineers to figure out a way to program the channels so that, you know, if you put them under these lights and then you have some type of recipe that during germination for the first 2 weeks you have, you know, whatever the mix is, X, how, depending on how many components you have, you could say, well, I want to do X for the first 2 weeks. To maximize my leaf to stem ratio, I want to do Y the next week. I think there's some questions as to why are we fixing ourselves to the 400 to 700 nanometer range. I mean, it could be wider. That's fine. I'm just thinking for us, it's like, well, these are the things we're looking for. We need to have plants that germinate. We need to have them survive. We need to have them with the most leaf area that we possibly can for the amount of biomass that we produce. If we need to do any changes, we don't want to put on any growth regulators, but if there is a way to use lighting to get what we want, then that's what we'll do, as long as the fixture is capable of doing it. So, and then the other thing is that we infiltrate the plants, and it takes 7 days. I've shown that it takes 7 days for the plants to get up to expressing. So in post-infiltration, what lighting regime should we use? Because it's a little bit harder in post-infiltration because in terms of just growing plants, well, not just, but growing plants, there's a fair amount of information about plants or similar species of plants that we use. Those plants and how they respond after they've been inoculated with our inoculum, with agrobacterium that's going through the cell wall, that's going into the nucleus of the cell and replicating out of it, it's like, well, what kind of physiology is happening there? There is some stress trying to overcome a virus, but there's a point of recovery as well. You'll see this, your protein will peak and then it'll start going down, so I'm not sure exactly what's happening to that protein. How is the plant dealing with that? I mean, the plants don't look great, but nonetheless, they're kicking out the protein, or they were, and now they're not doing that anymore. So they must be doing something else. I'm not too sure. But if in post-infiltration, if we could optimize that lighting to get more protein, that would be worthwhile for us as well. So, you know, I think the flexibility that we have with our lighting or what's going to be available is that, yeah, you do have more chances for more than four or however many elements you want, different wavelengths. And you can do the making up recipes for your plants to optimize. So in summary, for plant-based pharmaceuticals, what we're, you know, my area, what we're looking at is that this technology is gaining acceptance. There are clinical trials that have already been completed or in process with plant-based material. These are human clinical trials. So they're going on right now. And, you know, if someone is going to spend $357 million on a company, I'm guessing they have to do their research and understand that that is a, you know, viable option. Also, just to point out that, you know, our production objectives are different. And the economics of what we're doing is somewhat different, well, quite different. So it's just something that's a different field for controlled environments. And, you know, for us, we're also looking at LEDs as the potential to maximize both plant growth and protein production. So I'd like to thank the organizers for giving us the opportunity. Also, my colleagues at Fraunhofer and Rebecca Snow, Dave Wiener, and Ryan Dayton. So, thank you.
So we have about 4 minutes for a couple questions for Joe. I have one to start. This is a unique niche that most of this community is really not very aware of. So, what kind of demand do you see in terms of, like, if you were a lighting manufacturer targeting this, you know? Do you see it growing, and how much?
Well, I could start giving you the sales pitch for plant-based pharmaceuticals, but I'll spare you for that. But so we are a contract research, contract manufacturing facility. But to be honest, if you already have something and it's working, you won't mess with that. What will come to us are things that are hard to produce. So they tried. They tried E. coli. They tried CHO cells. They've tried these other things, and that protein, they just can't make it. And then at some point, they'll say, well, we haven't tried plants, and here's a facility that has these capabilities, so why don't you try this? There is a niche there for manufacturers. It's a little bit hard to, I shouldn't say it's hard. I mean, the guys at Texas have quite the facility with all LEDs. And I guess that if you get in early enough and know what they're working on, then you could you could have a hand in that, because I think also that obviously this is a closed environment situation. Basically, everything that you put out from that light, I have to pull out with the HVAC. So if I could do that less with LEDs than I do with HPS or whatever I've got, well, you know, direct savings right there. So, it's a little bit, I don't know. And the other issue is that because you're regulated and let's say you have a process and it's going well with different lighting, I don't know if anyone has gone through the transition to say to the FDA, it's like, well, we do this with fluorescent lights. We want to do this with these lights. How do you bridge that? And then where they come back and say, if you're the first one, there's going to be more hurdles for you. I mean, if there's someone else going ahead of you, then it gets a little bit less. So in that respect, I'm not sure how they do that transition. But in terms of a plant-based pharmaceutical platform, there are more people going through those hurdles now. So you do see more of it coming around.
Okay.